yes, 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 yes,
yes,
yes. Welcome to episode 2 of Hip in the Lip. I am Hip, and joined by my co-host, The Lip.
Unfortunately, The Lip will return for episode number 2.
Unfortunately for the listeners, that is.
Exactly.
You know what tonight is?
It's Wednesday, June 13th. January 13th, excuse me.
Good start. Yes, it is Wednesday. It is not June 13th. Do you also know what tonight is?
I also know what tonight is. Well, it's a chilly night here in NYC. It is. Is it like some kind of like hipster holiday that I'm not aware of, and I should be ashamed for not knowing that? Is that?
It's too cool for you to know about, so I'm not gonna share with the audience. God forbid, there's more than 2 people listening. We can't share the details. Tonight, it will actually about 40 minutes from as we speak will be the drawing for the largest lottery jackpot ever.
Yes. So it works out well because once we win, we can then quit our day jobs and then just focus on this entirely and actually put out good shows for our audience.
So are you saying you actually bought a ticket yourself?
Shh, don't tell anybody. It was meant to be a secret. I even wore a mask when I walked in the convenience store. So the guy behind the counter, actually I was robbing him. He goes, okay, just take everything. I'm like, no. I just don't want anybody to know I'm buying a Powerball ticket. So just very quietly, here's my $2. Give me some random numbers. And I walked on out. Luckily the police didn't show up until I was already, a block away. So they didn't know that he, I didn't know that he had tripped the silent alarm. But I was only a block away.
You spent $2?
$2. That was enough.
What did your office
do? I was reading that the lottery is a wonderful investment, but no, I decided just to – no, actually, I'll be honest. I gave my money to my roommate, and he actually purchased a ticket for us. So we are going to be very much anticipating that drawing later on this evening. What is it, like 11:30?
Wait, so what happens if – if it's a winning ticket, or is it a split? Is it like a handshake you guys did, or is it actually your numbers?
Nah, we'll probably fight to the death as to who gets all the money. So,
you only have one ticket?
No. So we each, all the three of us, myself and my two roommates, we contributed $10 each. One of the roommates went out and purchased the ticket today. So I think it's however many sets of numbers. I don't know. So it's $2 a set of numbers. So there you go. Do the math.
I actually want you to do it.
Yeah, well, I wasn't a math major, so I think I forgot everything from, from third grade math.
Part of me thinks you actually don't know.
Well, $2, right? So times 15, $30 divided by 15, 30 divided by 2, 15? Is that – I think. Correct me if I'm wrong.
All right. You got 15 combinations at the 1.5 bill. And lucky that your friend went to go pick the numbers. Actually, I had this thought before. Imagine if you had to pick the numbers for the lottery. Awful of a setup that would be for you, because you would never buy a ticket because you would never be able to decide what numbers to choose.
That is accurate. My partner, the Hip, is alluding to the fact that I have a lot of trouble making decisions, especially one as tough as deciding which numbers I will choose for a lotto ticket, of which my chances of winning, was it again, 1 in 300 in kajillion, something like that?
Something like that. And, right. I like the fact that you call me partner. I don't know. I guess that I never used that word. I'm not sure why you decided to use it.
You saw the photo on our website, Hip in the Lip. I mean,
it's not like we were holding hands.
Well, no, but we were walking, side by side with a little, what I would appear to be a little baby hipster in that little baby carrying thing that you had on. And, I was carrying the baby bag and, it was a nice picture. We're partners.
You really treasure that picture.
No other implication other than what I just described, and I very much do treasure that picture, actually. I thought it was a fabulous choice.
Speaking of which, that is our picture for this podcast. It is on iTunes now. We are now, Hip in the Lip is available on iTunes for the 5 subscribers out there. We have a website.
Don't crash the site. Right.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's breaking down as we speak now that I've announced it. We have a website, hipinthelip.com. Nothing really there yet other than me doing all the work and uploading the audio files and just telling my alleged partner that it was done.
Well done.
All we ask of you, Lip, is to show up to these recordings and I think that's high enough of expectations for you. That's what partners are for. You know, we like to talk about the best of us and bring out the worst. So
hey, you know what though, to be fair, now I did watch that entire Islander game on Saturday from start to finish. So, because I would not have if I was not doing it with the intent of having material for the show. So, I think a little credit to me that I spent the Saturday afternoon watching that dreck. But anyway, continue.
I was with you, at least as far as watching it. Shutout loss in Philly. And, as someone here who's watched them not too much this year, more recently than previously. I mean, just as a standalone game, they just looked absolutely horrible. Perhaps you can give us a more thorough take of it, given the Islander season to this point.
Well, I guess it was a good segue into to this part to discuss the awful, awful game that took place on Saturday. And they did follow up with a good performance yesterday, which we'll get into in a little bit. But if we're going to start with that just dreck on Saturday, it was one of the worst games I've seen in a while. They were hideous. I mean, and for some reason, they play bad at times in afternoon games. I don't know why. People have actually, looked into this and, their records in afternoon games and, over the last however many years, however many years it is, and they are just bad in afternoon games. I don't know why, but yeah, they were hideous on Saturday. Nobody showed up for that game. They were outshot, I think, 11-2 in the first period. They were scoreless. They were lucky to be scoreless going into the second, and then they get a goal early, Philadelphia, and the Islanders basically mailed it in from there. Just a dreadful game. And I also just want to say that I am a member of the Islander Mania message board. And I will go to this message board, and I'm gonna, acknowledge the group of guys there that you're not gonna find a more diehard group of fans than the guys that assemble at this particular message board. Knowledgeable, know the team inside out, know the game inside out. I mean, just love the inside people with their comments about and observations about a game or just more broader general topics. But I'm gonna acknowledge Isles Fan 102, who I want to. Read his quote, one of his quotes after the game was over. He said, "That was actually the worst game I've ever seen, like worse than at any point in the rebuild years. That was just absurdly gutless and non-competitive. I am a pretty calm person, but that was too much garbage to bear. That's a game that should get people fired." And I share that sentiment.
What people should get fired?
Now you're opening up a whole nother can of worms, and a lot of Islander fans' thoughts on the general manager and the head coach. I guess we'll get to that another time. But the game was that bad where the owner should have at least called the general manager and the coach into his office and said, "Hey, gentlemen, what in the hell was that? That was awful. If I have to watch anything like that again, you're both out the door. That door right there." So it was that bad. They were completely non-competitive in the game, and it was basically just for them, it was just like an exhibition skating session.
What is your username on Islander Mania?
My username is IsleFan16, and there's nothing behind it other than I was not feeling the creative juices flowing when I chose it. I like the number 16.
Sounds about right.
Well, those that have listened probably are saying to them, are listening or saying to themselves, "Well, when are they ever flowing?" But Pat LaFontaine was one of my favorite players when I was younger. He wore the number 16, and I kind of adopted that number. I always wear that number whenever I have had a, whenever I played a sporting event and had to pick a jersey. You know, jersey number, I always chose 16. So that is the origin of Isle Fan 16.
So I'm in the process of signing up an account on Islander Mania right now. And
when?
they give me a pop quiz.
Really?
To help protect against spammers, who is the Islanders' current captain? So my best guess is John Tavares.
Is it fill-in?
It's fill-in. So I'm going to type in John Tavares and see if I sound like an idiot.
I'm pretty sure. I'll let that guy, the number 91, he had that C on his uniform.
So we Hip in the Lip is a member of Islander Mania.
Is that going to be the username?
It has been created.
All right. That was the only question? That's the only quiz? The only quiz question I gave you was who's the current captain?
The only quiz question for now. Maybe next time I'll find some random posts from you and see if you can recall the context of what you said. I think that'd be kind of funny.
I'm sure I'll be able to. I think I don't post that often because honestly, anything that you could possibly think about, whether you're watching a game or just a broader topic or discussing a particular player or whatever. Everybody gets everything out there. I mean, everything's laid on the table. Every single like potential opinion or, you know, a thought about anything is laid out there pretty extensively and exhaustively.
So basically you're saying, you know, all you really do is you read the message boards on Islander Mania and don't develop any original thoughts of your own and then come on this podcast and make it sound like you know everything and anything about the Islanders, but it's really because of other people's contributions.
Well, I think my secret is out now. Everybody now knows where I get my material from, but I will have an original thought every now and again. I will put it out there. You know, it's either just to, whether it's agreeing with somebody or if I have something to add, you know, if someone puts in a thought or an opinion out there and I want to, you know, add something to it, a different layer to it. I will do that every now and again. But I am very much entertained by it. It's always been an area where I can go and, for the most part, not celebrate, you know, joyous moments because Islanders really don't give us too many of those. It's more to just commiserate with my fellow Islander diehard Islander fans, after, you know, bad losses or whatever, bad trades or non-trades or non-free agent signings or whatever. That for me, it's mostly a place for me to be able to go and do that. And honestly, I absolutely don't know what I would do without it at this point.
Some heavy endorsement of Islander Mania, and I'm looking forward to sharing some quotations from it from you in the future. So, all right, good enough for now.
All right.
Was there anything else you wanted to say about the game against the Flyers?
Honestly, there's really not much to say. I mean, it's like one of those games, and you know, one of the cliches from players is just forget about it, move on, you know, burn the tape, you know, and I think it's appropriate here.
Are you trying to imitate someone when you use that voice? Like, is that supposed to be like what an Islanders player, average Islanders player sounds like?
No, I just want to make sure that I'm differentiating, when it was this for the audience, so they know when I'm mocking or trying to imitate, whether it's somebody in particular specific or, you know, just like your general athlete. We'll go.
So your distinguishing imitation voice is, oh, well, we're just going to turn the page and move it on. So I can't think of anyone that might sound like. I'm guessing that's just, another radio broadcaster, perhaps.
maybe I've subconsciously like adopted his voice as my go-to imitation of a...
I don't think it's subconscious.
No, I gotta say, I definitely was not thinking this when I just did my imitation just now. It was, I guess I just deepened my voice, and, you know, that way, you know, it's very distinguishable from my regular voice, and, you know, at least give the audience a break from my regular voice. I'll be honest, I was not thinking about that particular radio personality when I did my imitation.
All right, next. So the Islanders had a game last night at home against Columbus Blue Jackets, and the most entertaining part about the game for me was just seeing the one or two reactions from the opposing head coach when a goal or two scored by the Islanders. You know, he's just so over the top with his facial expressions, reacting to plays and replays. I think he specializes in that field, and he has his own little piece in our history together, Mr. John
Tortorella.
Very much
so. Absolutely.
And what did you like about this win? 5-2 win.
They played well. I think I should also interject that Travis, because I don't think he was not announced as being injured our last broadcast. So Travis Hamonic is going to be out for the next couple weeks minimum. He apparently has I'm shocked that this information was released as per what we were discussing our last podcast. But Hamonic will be out for the next couple weeks due to a hairline fracture in his foot. I guess he blocked the shot against the Capitals last Thursday. And he will be out for a couple weeks. So now they are missing two of their top four defensemen, of course, in Boychuk and now Hamonic. So they're going to, now they're relying on, the bottom of the barrel and the Brian Straits and the Marek Zidlickys. Although I will go, just going back to the Flyer game on Saturday, they had two rookie defensemen paired together playing in that game. Well, I thought actually held their own. I mean, it wasn't their fault that they lost. Again, nobody showed up in that game. But so Adam Pellick, who we discussed last podcast, and Scott Mayfield was called up once Hamonic got injured, and they played together on Saturday. Pellick was in the lineup again yesterday. Mayfield sat out, of course, to make room for the amazing Brian Strait, who actually, you talk about a guffaw, something that induces a huge guffaw. It was when he scored a goal yesterday. He scored the fourth goal of the game, and I couldn't just help but bust out laughing when I saw this, because it's just, he even does it like in that awkward way that, a defenseman that has zero like actual hockey skill. It seemed like he barely got his stick on the puck. It somehow like found its way through the goalie, trickled between his legs for the fourth goal of the game. But
if there was someone to imitate the way that he scored the goal, I can't think of anyone else but you.
Well, if I can one day demonstrate, with some video, I'm sure that I could probably, maybe not be worse than Brian Strait, because it's tough for anybody to actually.
I mean, you wouldn't be imitating him as much as we would just ask you to try to shoot a puck in the net on skates and in your natural way, which to the spectator looks anything but. just the way that you're describing his goal just, reminds me of the days of, playing like CYO basketball with you and seeing you like crash into the pads of the wall because you had a fast break all by yourself and you lost control of the ball and tripped over yourself and went out of bounds without putting up a shot. that's an image that will never leave my mind.
That's a memory that I had forgotten about. Maybe I repressed that memory. Well, to be fair, I didn't have the ball. I was not dribbling it and it lost control. The ball was thrown ahead. I was running out ahead on the fast break. The ball was thrown ahead in front of me. I, of course, should have had the ball and been able to control it and go in for an easy layup. But whoops, a little bobble, stumble, and into the wall I go.
Sounds about right for the lip. So with down two defensemen, Pellick, so you said that they called up another guy?
So on Saturday they called up Scott Mayfield, who is a big, bruising, 6'5" defenseman. He's a guy that's not going to give you much offense. He's not a guy that's, the most fleet of foot, much like Brian Strait as well, or myself. He's a big physical defenseman. He shows promise. He played in the playoffs last year with a team. He definitely shows promise. He's like the mold of your third typical third pairing, big physical stay at home defenseman. And I definitely think he has the potential to be that in the NHL one day, whether it's with the Islanders or another team. But I thought, you know, him and Pellick played pretty well on Saturday. They were definitely not the reason why they lost. Yeah, they played, you know, they played pretty well. And Mayfield was out of the lineup yesterday, again, to make room for the incredible Brian Strait, who Islander fans are hoping will, once everybody's back and healthy, they'll never have to see him don an Islander uniform ever again. Maybe they'll shoot him into the sun or something. I don't know. But
how come so you were talking about Mayfield and his body type, and I could see you getting excited, particularly about that aspect. but head out, he is a prototypical third line pairing defenseman. Can you explain to us why?
Well, I mean, most teams, their top four defensemen, I mean, now most NHL teams are looking for, and when I say top four, I'm basically referring to defensemen that are going to play the most minutes. I mean, you'll see a pretty big disparity between your top four defensemen and then your last two defensemen in terms of minutes. So when I say prototypical third pairing defenseman, I mean a guy that's not going to play, you know, like more than 15 or 16 minutes a game. He's not a guy that's, you know, great in terms of, you know, leading the team out in transition. Again, he's not a great skater. He's not going to carry the puck up ice, but he serves a purpose in that he seems like he's pretty responsible in his own zone. You know, you every team, even though you're looking for young, faster, defense, you know, players that can, you know, that are, good in terms of, you know, making the first pass up to the forwards, are good at, you know, making the simple play in their own zone to, you know, lead the team in transition. Mayfield's a guy that can, you know, play responsibly in his own zone, you know, just play with composure, you know, add a physical element, which teams still, you know, do want in their lineup. And I think he could definitely be that at the NHL level one day.
So I'm looking up right now how much ice time Scott Mayfield had in the last game. You mentioned 15 to 16 minutes, the third pairing would typically play.
On average. Well, I mean, it depends. Some teams you're going to see those guys, and I guess referring to the – probably alluding to the fact that he played far less.
don't get defensive yet. I'm in the process of looking it up. So TOI, I think, is – TOI is the stat.
Time on ice.
Yep. Okay, so his last five games, he's only played one. And his time on ice, 14 minutes and 55 seconds. So that's pretty damn close. He said 15 or 16 minutes. Damn, man. God. That's why we have you to share the ridiculousness of that detail.
Up for the fact that I didn't actually contribute to any of the technical aspects of our show.
Now, I wonder if right. So I wonder how many Islander fans could. I guess there's fans who study the box score after each game. They must look at that stuff. But if you had to go up to somebody and ask them off the top of their head how many minutes within a minute range did Scott Mayfield play against the Islanders, you're right there. I mean, you're off by 5 seconds.
Oh yeah, it's an average. But you'll see other defensemen, you know, play less, you know, in the 11 to 13 range. But yeah, usually you'll see a bigger disparity in your top four defensemen as opposed to your bottom two defensemen.
So what's this? So what's this deal about? You know, suggesting a change at the coaching position.
I think we're all, you know, we've been all clamoring. Any diehard fan has been clamoring for this for a long time. So I'll just add to that. So Saturday, the game that they lost 4-0, where nobody showed up, Jack Capuano, the head coach, actually coached in his 400th game for the Islanders. Now, I'm going to throw this in there, too. So when I heard that, I said, wow, I want to check. Now, the Islanders have not won a playoff series in, now we're going on 23 years. The last time they won a playoff series was 1993. Now, Jack Capuano, of course, you know, has not coached an Islander team that's won a playoff series. So I said to myself, you know what? I am going to check, see if I can pull up Every NHL coach that has coached at least 400 games for one team and see how many other coaches did not win a single playoff series for, you know, while coaching that team. And I discovered that there was only one coach, one other coach that coached 400 games for one team and did not win a single playoff series. His name was Harry Neal. I have no idea who that is. I didn't even look to see what team it was. I think it was probably like in the 60s or 70s or something. But he is the only other coach to coach that many games and not win a single playoff series.
Now, if are you looking at whether they won a playoff series as of game 400 or just guys who have coached at least 400 for the same team, and did they win a playoff series at any point during their coaching career for that team?
The latter.
So I think you have to strengthen your point. This is a friendly suggestion the air. You strengthen your point, perhaps, to see of all the other coaches who have coached more than 400 games for a single team, did any others not win a playoff series within the first 400? There may be yeses to that. I don't know.
I doubt it. I mean, when you think about how, you know, professional sports franchises, you know, the goal is to win, isn't that? I mean, yes, it's to make money, and, you know, I mean, obviously it's a different world now, but the goal is to win. Isn't that the goal, to win?
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. A little bit of an obvious statement. Fair. The goal of any owner is for your team to win, and that also could mean you make more money when your team wins. The Islanders have not won a playoff series in 23 years. Garth Snow now has been the general manager of the team since 2006, and they've won nothing. Forget about winning a championship. They haven't won a playoff series. And every team that wins the cup, going back to the the early 80s, has had to win four playoff series to win the cup. And they haven't won more than 23 years.
In a single year. They have to win.
So to say that Jack Capuano, and look, I like Jack. I think he's a good coach in the sense that he is a good coach for younger players. He seems to have a good rapport with younger players. Has a lot more patience. I think he's suited to coach in the AHL. I think he'd be a good minor league AHL coach. And I think he was the right guy after Scott Gordon, who was the previous coach, after he was fired. I mean, he basically had, you know, no interpersonal skill. At least this is what we heard. A lot of players did not like playing for him. It was all about the system. I'm not going to try and, you know, maximize the talents of my players. I'm just going to make them play in my system. So I think Capuano, who doesn't really play with, there's really not really a system in place with him. I think he was the right guy to take over the team at that time. They were not going anywhere. They were in the middle of their rebuild. And I think it was fine, but they have given him too many opportunities. He should have been fired countless times by now. And the fact that he still is a coach, I'll be honest, it's a travesty. We're all just waiting for the day that he gets canned. They bring in a real head coach that can take this team to the next level, because right now they are – basically stuck in mediocrity. And
but do you see them making up, like, the Islanders are staying playoff relevant right now?
Yes.
So in the 5 years, five full seasons that he's coached, he's made the playoffs twice. I'm just looking at his coaching record now.
One of them was a shortened season.
48 game season.
If you're going to nitpick.
Hey, that's what we're here for, because nobody's listening. We're just talking. yeah. So you can just say anything weird. Nobody's gonna
notice it.
If the season ended today, they're in the playoffs. So I guess what I'm getting at is if they kind of continue on this path for this year, you don't see them making any moves during the season, right? I mean,
they would have to go like on maybe like a 14-game losing streak for him to lose his job. Although, if they're considering firing him after loss number 14 in a row, if he wins the next game, they'll go, well, we can't fire him now. They just won. So, no, he's not going to get fired this year. I'd be beyond shocked if he was fired this year. It's not happening. he will be the coach, and they will have to live and die with him behind the bench, at least until the end of the season. And that's when the new ownership will take effect. And hopefully they, if the Islanders again, you know, go either don't make the playoffs, which, I mean, there's no justification there. If they don't make the playoffs, everybody's out anyway. If they go one and done, which will be a failure, in my opinion, if they make the playoffs but lose in the first round, I don't care if they go seven games, four, you know, get swept, whatever. It's a failure, and everybody should be fired anyway. I mean, he'll be there at least through the end of the season.
You know, I heard the other day that he is the second longest tenured professional coach of all New York City metropolitan area teams.
Now, this is before, this is now after Coughlin's firing?
Correct.
Okay. I mean, if that doesn't say it all, I don't know what does. So I guess obviously after Girardi, I guess, right?
After Joe Girardi, Jack Capuano is the longest current tenured head coach. That's right.
Says it all. Says it all.
New York City metropolitan professional sports teams. Not too many people, you know, probably. If you went up to even an average sports fan, first of all, they might not even know who the name of the Islanders coach is. Secondly, they'll never name him as their answer, probably. If they get, you know, look, if you give them a chance to think about it, maybe. But people would probably guess Terry Collins. That would be my thought. Is where people would probably go. Or the Rangers, or the Rangers coach. But just thought that was an interesting point. The guy's coached 400 games for the Islanders, and if he walked down, you know, street on 34th Street in Manhattan past Macy's, how many people are noticing who he is?
I don't know. Unless you're a diehard fan, you are definitely not recognizing him. although I did see him once in a Buffalo Wild. Now, one of the ongoing jokes, one of the running jokes on the message boards is that whenever you see Jack, you know, like have like a serious look on his face, people are then joking like, oh, he's not actually thinking about like, oh, how, you know, strategy for the game or, you know, whatever. He's thinking about his post-game hamburger. So, you know, his post-game meal, which, you know, probably would be like some kind of double cheeseburger, you know, from Hardee's or something. But
does he talk about food or something? Like what? He's not like that overweight, is he?
Well, I guess it's partly an allusion to his, you know, being slightly overweight, plus the fact that he's not actually thinking about the game during the game. He's thinking about, you know, something that's, you know, like it's funny. Like, I think it just sounds funny to, you know, to say that he's thinking about his post-game burger. So I think that's partly that, partly.
It's coming from someone who's like a big Simpsons fan or something by chance. Because we have one of those present. I'll leave it to the audience to guess.
I would love to see somebody get a still shot with Jack, and he wears glasses every now and again. So I'd love to see somebody get a still shot of Jack with his glasses on, with like a kind of like a pensive look on his face. And but with like, you know, like the cartoon thought cloud with like a big double cheeseburger, right? I mean, I would be in hysterics.
You'd find it applicable to a lot of in-game situations. It sounds like
most in-game situations.
And for you, what is your cartoon cloud look like for your in-game situations? When you're watching the game, what is your cartoon cloud?
You know, I don't know. Actually, I'll have to think about that one.
All right, well, let's just paint a picture of what you are physically doing when you're watching the game. So typically you sit on the couch and watch?
I do. Unless I'm sitting in my chair like I am right now.
All right, you're in your chair now, but I know you have two TVs in your apartment next side by side with long couches, so I suspect you utilize that room for the game typically. And are you usually in a laying down position?
It depends, you know, if it's been a long day and I'm tired and, you know, I'm not expecting a positive outcome for the game and I'm hoping I can doze off before I can, you know, see the, crappiness unfold, then, maybe I'll put my feet up in hopes that I'll fall asleep before I can actually witness it.
So do you get changed between work and watch? I mean, the game starts at 7 o'clock. It's not like, you know, you have a lot of time between, you know, getting home from work and getting ready to start. So, but do you take the time to like get down and just like a t-shirt and boxers, or maybe just boxers? I just want the audience to have a visual of, you know, maybe they need to understand what a diehard Islander fan goes through on a nightly basis when they watch the game. It's kind of ritualistic. And so we want to try to appreciate the ritual of the lip in watching Islanders games. So shirt or no shirt, usually.
Typically no shirt. I will say now, I'm not usually a superstitious person. If I find that my shirtless, no pants, let's say I'm watching a game like that, they win, I will, from now on going forward, I will not change the outfits until they lose again.
So now that we've created a Twitter account, Hip in the Lip, and I'm trying to encourage you to tweet, I think that you're going to need to start tweeting that picture through the account every time there's a game.
All right, I will have somebody else.
I'm trying to think of creative ways to get you to tweet, and so I think that's a very simple, it's a simple command. You don't even have to be creative. You just snap the picture and put it on Twitter. And so we'll just see your topless body on the couch.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if I'm doing that, you know, during the game, I think people may be turned away because they'll be so focused on my picture, my very sexy picture. I don't think they'll be able to focus on the game.
Well, let them be the judge of that. So I think, you know, look, I have my own Twitter account. I've been tweeting for a long time. You don't. I think you have to take this one on, and I'm giving you a very simple way to start tweeting. I'm not even making you come up with thoughts. You don't even have to write sentences. You just have to take a simple picture. Now, whether or not you know how to take a picture and post it to Twitter, probably not, so that might be our biggest hurdle.
I'll get somebody to help me out with that.
Get somebody to help you out, and you're going to have that is what you're going to do. I just decided. That's how you're going to start tweeting through this account.
All right, done.
Okay.
I mean, pictures always says more than any, you know, any hashtag, exactly. You know, whatever. So, you know what? Perfect.
Start giving us something. Okay. So, when is the NHL All-Star Game?
The NHL All-Star Game takes place the last weekend of this month, I believe.
The last weekend of this month. Okay.
Yep.
So that the weekend is Saturday the 30th and Sunday the 31st. So is it Sunday the 31st?
I believe that the skills competition will be on Saturday, as it typically is, and the All-Star game itself will be on Sunday.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the story about the captain?
So John Scott, now the Islanders have only had one representative, John Tavares, who is not even really putting up all-star numbers this year, but since there was really nobody else that's doing that either on the team, I guess they figured they'll go with the superstar player. But John Scott, who is regarded, as, you know, one of the worst players in the league, essentially just a relic of something that used to be of use to teams, and that is the old age enforcer that basically had no hockey ability, no very little skill, other than the fact that he can drop the gloves and throw his fists. Usually, you know, a bigger, burlier type guy, 6'4", whatever. John Scott is 6'8", I believe, and he has bounced around. I think he's on his, like, you know, 17th team or something like that. I don't know. But so there was a joke, though, that was put forth, I'm sure, Twitter and other forms of social media, that got out to fans who thought it would be a lark to vote John Scott as an all-star game captain. So that means he is an all-star, but also a captain of the all-star team.
The fans vote for the captains?
Well, I believe that the fans vote. I guess it is just the captains. You know, I don't participate in it. I saw this story, though, about John Scott being voted as a captain. But I think what they do now is, you know, that you pick two captains, and then the captains, you know, choose the teams or whatever. You know, once the All-Stars are selected, you know, the two captains will choose amongst the All-Stars who will be on their team. But John Scott being voted as a captain also means, of course, that he will have NHL All-Star next to his name, which, again, I mean, it's just like the idea that this guy who has, again, I think like two or three career goals, again, is as worthless a player as you will find in the league. You know, he's been demoted again to the minors. So this was put out through social media to vote for him, and they have done that, and he is now a captain for the All-Star game. Hilarious.
So he might be at the All-Star game and in the minors at the same time. He won't be in the All-Star game, but it's possible he will be in the minors for the game.
I think they'll have to call him up again, I think. I'm not sure about that. That is a funny thought, though, that a minor league player will be an NHL All-Star game.
What does that say about the NHL in general, man, that a fan base can manipulate the system like that to that degree? I mean, we've recently seen baseball All-Star ballots get, you know, a certain market. I think Kansas City, if I recall, had like Omar Infante in the lead for second base last year or 2 years ago, and the MLB came forward and said, oh, there was some processing error. Well, who knows? They came up with some excuse that seven Kansas City Royals should not be starting the All-Star game. But this is not that case. This is more like targeting a single guy.
And it was a joke. I mean, it was absolutely a joke. And, you know, people ran with it. I mean, you know, I bet the people that started it probably didn't think that they can get enough people to vote for him to make it happen. But people just ran with it. And, you know, and now the NHL, of course, is embarrassed. And what they've done now, I guess, is they're going to limit who the fans are going to be able to vote for. Instead of letting them vote for whoever they want, as an All-Star game captain, now they're going to give them like a selection of players that they can choose from, you know, actual NHL All-Star players. So obviously the implication there is that they were embarrassed and that they feel that that this action undertaken by the fans creates a mockery of the All-Star game. But what I just want to say is that the NHL All-Star game itself is a mockery, because the game might as well be a bunch of figure skaters with sticks in their hands. I mean, there is absolutely, I mean, it's what they do on the ice is not hockey. There's no checking. There's no defense. It is simply, let's see if we can, you know, do some kind of like spinorama, you know, make a slick pass to a teammate and have them put the puck in the net, and, you know, the score will end up being like 13-11. And then the other thing is that this year they are making it into a 3-on-3 style tournament. I'm not even exactly sure what that means. But because people like the 3-on-3 format in overtime, they have turned that, they've taken that and they've now made the All-Star game a 3-on-3 tournament style format. So
tournament style?
That's what they said. I don't know. This is the NHL's words. I'm not even 100% sure, because honestly, I could care less about the All-Star game. I mean, like, I'll throw it on if there's nothing else, I'll throw it on for a few minutes and, you know, get a nice guffaw out of it. But other than that, it does not entertain me.
So. The skills competition, do you feel the same way?
I'll actually watch. I mean, the skills competition is, you know, could be, you know, it's fun to watch. So I actually will, I'll be honest, I get more enjoyment out of watching that than I do the All-Star game. Because then you're actually seeing them, put actual skills to test. And, you know, something like that, I think, is more appropriate for All-Stars to demonstrate their skills, as opposed to just having them skate against each other in a game format, without actually, you know, playing the game of hockey.
All right, so here's the description. The description is that there will be three 20-minute games played by divisional All-Star teams competing for a winner-take-all $1 million prize. The first two 20-minute games will be the semifinal round, with the Central Division All-Stars playing the Pacific Division and the Metropolitan Division All-Stars playing the Atlantic Division. The winners will play for the championship in the third game. That is your structure. Got that? Good. All right, next. So we talked a little bit about the NFL playoffs last time, and I think it's appropriate to do a follow-up. I mean, it is the NFL playoffs after all, and we like the NFL. At least I do. I don't know about you, but I do. So before we talk about the upcoming games on Saturday and Sunday, I just want to take a minute to talk about the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game. Right. Now, did you watch that game?
I did. Well, most of it.
The first three quarters or so were pretty much poor, unwatchable football. And obviously the last quarter, you know, if anybody read about it or saw a part of it, it was full of twists and turns. But, you know, the Bengals were down two scores, and you kind of and they did nothing the first three quarters. Pittsburgh, I think, scored a touchdown, maybe two touchdowns. And you wanted Cincinnati. You were rooting for Cincinnati, the home team, haven't won a playoff game in 25 years, to come back, make a comeback, right? I mean, you're watching this game, and they did zero on offense. And sure enough, they start showing signs of life, and A.J. McCarron starts making some plays, and they get back in the game, and you're like, all right, this is great. And then the game just turns completely out of control, and, you know, Ben Roethlisberger goes down, and the fans are throwing stuff at him as he gets carted off. I mean, come on. What is that? I understand they may be upset because their player, Giovanni Bernard, was knocked out on a head-to-head hit, which was ruled legal, by the way. And yeah, I think it was the correct ruling because he made a football move. Now, you may disagree with the rule itself, but it was the right call. And yet the fans are throwing stuff at an injured player. I mean, it doesn't really get any more classless than that. So that was one point where my interest in seeing them come back started to turn. But, you know, I kind of let that go. It's the fans. It wasn't the players. You know, maybe it's just the fans are still emotional from what happened earlier. And then you have Landry Jones comes in and throws this interception to Vontae Burdick, that linebacker who just seemed like perfect, he was an exploding piece of dynamite, right?
Yeah. Perfect.
Perfect, yep. And Marvin Lewis is trying to just, like, make him keep stay control on the sidelines. I think Perfect, like, ran through the tunnel after he made that interception. He just kept going in stride or something ridiculous. So then Jeremy Hill fumbles the ball. Now, it's like under 2 minutes at this point, and Jeremy Hill loses a fumble right back to the Steelers, and now all of a sudden, Ben Roethlisberger comes back into the game. Like, he couldn't on the last drive, but, you know, 5 minutes later, oh, yeah, you know what, my shoulder's fine. I'll go out there now, which I kind of found funny. But it happened. And so then the complete ridiculous, you know, loss of control by the Cincinnati Bengals – with Vontae Burfict, is that right?
Vontae Burfict, I believe is the name.
Vontae Burfict, illegal hit of Antonio Brown, just complete, deliberate, head-to-head, defenseless receiver, no excuses. You get flagged 15 yards, and then who else? Adam Pac-Man Rapsheet Jones bumping an official, another 15 yards, and then it's a chip shot field goal. And you know what? I'm glad that the Bengals lost, because that you just don't want a team that plays like that. I mean, it just doesn't – it's not a good example for the league, and they're dirty, and clearly their coach was unable to control them for all 60 minutes. And so while – part of me earlier wanted the Bengals to come back, I'm glad that their playoff drought continues, because shame, just shame on them. It was just really, really bad.
It was really disgraceful. And it was a black eye for the NFL. Great comeback. I mean, you see McCarron, who, you know, was kind of talking himself up, you know, throughout the week, and, you know, did nothing for the first three quarters, leads him on this great comeback, you know, makes a couple really good throws. And, you know, all of a sudden now Cincinnati's in the lead and they have a chance to win the game. I mean, they have a chance to basically run out the clock once Burfict makes the interception. And then Hill, of course, fumbles the ball, which was, hey, look, the defender made the play. I'm not a big fan of ripping the ball out. But you know what? It's not like he was held up by four guys and the ball ripped out, which is something that you'll see and which is something I don't like. But whatever. So anyway, so they get the ball back now, Pittsburgh. And, yeah, I mean, you know, you're saying, like, I was thinking to myself, all right, I still want to see Cincinnati pulled off here, hold Pittsburgh here, and you know, pull out the game. And then obviously, of course, you see the just a dangerous, vicious hit by Burfict on Brown, and you see Brown just kind of spin around and go down to the ground, and you know, which was just an absolutely horrible thing to watch. And then obviously all the nonsense after with Joey Porter on the field and getting, you know, under the guys that he's helping the injured Pittsburgh Steelers player, when in actuality he was just trying to stir things up. You know, he already knew that emotions were running high and that they were hot under the collar anyway. But yeah, so you see him then, you know, engage Pac-Man Jones, who, you know, then I guess inadvertently bumped an official to try and get the Porter, and then he gets the penalty. And one thing I'll say about that also is I just hated the fact that the game ended on two penalties that put them into chip shot field goal range. You know, the first one, they had to throw that flag on Burfict. It was a penalty, 100%. They had to throw the flag. But the second one, you just hate to see the game decided on something like that, something that's not a part of the game, something that just takes place after the play is already over. I thought maybe they could have, you know, thrown a flag on, you know, on the Pittsburgh sideline, unsportsmanlike conduct, whatever, offset the penalties and make them at least try a 50-yard field goal. But, yeah, it was just a black eye for the NFL, and it was just an unfortunate way for that game to end.
And now, you know, Antonio Brown, it looks like he's not going to play against Denver, which is obviously a huge loss. And Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, they're hoping he's going to play. Somehow he's – I mean, the way he went down, it looked like he had the same injury that Tony Romo injured that Tony Romo went through twice last year, breaking his collarbone. I was shocked that he came back out. I mean, it's just the way he landed on his shoulder and was holding that collarbone area. I'm like, all right. But Ben Roethlisberger is just made of a different mold, apparently. And look, he didn't make any downfield throws during that last drive. It was very clear that everything was close to the line of scrimmage.
Oh, yeah. He had no arm.
If there were no penalties against the Bengals, they probably would not have been able to even get in position for field goal because they couldn't get down the field fast enough. Anyway, so now they have to go at Denver.
Yeah.
An injured Roethlisberger without Antonio Brown. I don't know if D'Angelo Williams is expected back, but man, that's a banged up team going against Peyton Manning, who's now back in the playoff mix.
Surgeon Peyton Manning.
Well, at 39 years old, so we'll see how that plays. That's an interesting situation there. So, you know, look, Denver has such a good defense. I think if they just can run the ball a bit on Pittsburgh and not turn it over, Pittsburgh is just going to be very hard-pressed to score any points in that game. I mean, Denver's going to have to hand Pittsburgh – points. I that's the only way I really see this game not staying close.
They're going to be hard pressed to win this game.
That's the only way the game is going to stay close. Yes, is if if Peyton Manning is noodle armed and makes some stupid throws, or throws that he could have made it 30 but not 39, or this fumbles or something. But Pittsburgh's going to need a lot of help in that one. You know, New England hosting Kansas City. This weekend, you know, it's Bill Belichick. Can you really go against him? Kansas City's shown pretty well here. You know, they destroyed Houston on the road. But you just have to think Tom Brady with Julian Edelman supposedly will be back, that they'll just find with Gronkowski, obviously, and, you know, the emerging James White. they'll just find a way to win that. They'll just find a way to win that football game. I'd be surprised if Kansas City pulled it off. But they could. I mean, they're good enough. Although Jeremy Maclin, I believe, is not in that game. Jeremy Maclin got injured.
I don't think he practiced today. I think his status is still up in the air. They desperately need him in that game. They need a chance to win. But I do agree with you. I think both AFC road teams, while we saw all four road teams win on – in wild card week, and I think that at least the two AFC road teams are going to be very hard pressed to win. I agree with you completely on Denver and Pittsburgh, and then on this game, I mean, Kansas City, you know, they're basically predicated on you know, making plays on defense, making plays on special teams. You know, Alex Smith will, you know, make a play or two a game. You know, they have a, you know, a pretty good running game. Macklin, you know, obviously is capable of making big plays. But, I mean, a healthier New England team, like you said, getting back Edelman, obviously, you know, have that time to rest up now. They should be healthier on defense. And that defense is very good. That's a good New England defense over there. So I don't think the Chiefs are going to be able to score a lot of points. Question is, can the Chiefs maybe induce Tom Brady into a turnover, get good field position, and, you know, score off of something like that. So, but I do agree with you on both of those games.
They're going to have to maybe be creative with Charcandrick West out of the backfield or something. Yeah. I mean, if without Macklin, I mean, they have Travis Kelce, who we, you know, is a very fine tight end, but who are they throwing the ball to on the outside? I mean, that is, I think they had a rookie score a touchdown against Houston, but Houston was just so not in that game. And anyway, enough about those games, I think. So the NFC, I think, present both very exciting matchups. Unlike the AFC, to me, I mean, the games are, you know, you watch them if they're on, but they're not like, you know, powerhouses going after each other. You just don't get that feeling about them. Seattle at Carolina. I mean, that should be a great game. You know, Seattle actually shouldn't even be here, thanks to Blair Walsh. Just blowing a kick. I kind of write that game off with the temperature, and you know, it just was a weird game playing in such cold. They're not used to it. Neither team was ever in sync on anything. So I just kind of call that one a mulligan, and you know, we're back to the Seattle team we were talking about last podcast.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off here, Mr. Hip, but I just want to say, if there's one special teams player that can empathize with Blair Walsh's situation, it is a punter on the University of Michigan who had a similar, not similar play in that he missed the field goal, but a play that resulted in a stunning loss for his team. Earlier this year, so I just wanted to point that out. But anyway, please continue.
So there might be two listeners out there that don't know that University of Michigan is my alma mater, and that was one of the worst ways you could ever see a football game end for your team. Granted, it wasn't a championship game, and their season didn't end on that play, but man, just watch. If you're not familiar with this, just Google Michigan versus Michigan State punter fumble, and that kind of tells you the story, but you still have to see it to truly appreciate how awful that was. No cutoff. I mean, I just think it's a good Seattle, Carolina. I think it's just going to be one of those real tough fought games against two really good teams, and it should be fun.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really good game. I think I think Seattle can absolutely go in there and win. I'll chalk up their very lackluster performance on offense to the conditions. It'll be a little bit better in Carolina this weekend. Yeah, I think it'll be a good matchup. Carolina is a very well-rounded team. Very good defense. Obviously, the offense took off with Cam Newton this year, who put up absolutely ridiculous numbers. Will probably be the MVP this year. But Seattle, hey, look, they can still play defense. Their secondary looked very good against Minnesota the other day, last weekend. We know that Russell Wilson can put up points in bunches with those receivers. And again, you know, people will be playing in better conditions than they were. So it should be a good game. I give a slight edge to Carolina, but it should be a very entertaining game, to say the least.
And finally, Green Bay at Arizona. Green Bay, you know, for them, it felt like an offensive explosion because they just did not show – they did not show that kind of offense in a while against the Redskins last week, which took me a bit by surprise. I really thought that the Redskins would be able to hang with them, but – Maybe Kirk Cousins got a little bit exposed for a change. Arizona, then, you know, was maybe the best trio of wide receivers in the NFL. And Carson Palmer having a fantastic season, and David Johnson emerging as a legitimate NFL running back. So they're going to be, you know, they're going to score points, and it's going to be a question of if Green Bay, I think, can continue what they were doing last week against a better defense. So that's what we'll have to see play out there.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't think they will. I think this is a bad matchup for Green Bay. I think Arizona is clearly the better team here. We know it's Rodgers. We saw what he's capable of, as evidenced by his performance last week, which was terrific. But Arizona, I think, is definitely the better team, and I don't think they pose a good matchup. They have a very good pass rush, and we know that Green Bay offensive line can definitely be susceptible. They kind of patchworked and piecemealed the thing the whole season, it seemed like. And, it held up for the most part against the Redskins last weekend. But I think this is going to be a very tough chore for the Green Bay Packers to go into Arizona and beat that team. And as you mentioned, Carson Palmer had a tremendous year. Their offense, we know, can also be very explosive, have a good trio of receivers and a explosive running back. But I think this is going to be a tall order for Green Bay, and I don't think it's a good matchup for them.
All right, so let's wrap this one up on a note about the two Islanders, the next two games for the Islanders. So they have a game tomorrow night against the Rangers, and then Sunday late afternoon against the Canucks, both home games. So obviously, big rivalry game tomorrow night, and we'll be together, and look forward to me, you, and the four other Outer fans in New York City together watching it. I don't know of an Islanders bar in New York City. I don't know if it exists. It should.
There may be one by the Barclays Center. Are one of those bars by the Barclays Center now an Islanders bar, or are they just going to be invaded?
All right, maybe the Barclays. What about Manhattan? I mean, there should be one. I don't know if there is, but maybe that's something that our listeners can share with us. So what's something what do you have your eye on for the next couple games here for the Islanders?
Islanders Rangers. I mean, it's always a lot of fun. It's something that always gets the competitive juices flowing for everybody involved. Whether you're a player, whether you're a fan, the last game that they played at the Barclays about a month and a half ago was it was a pretty well played game. A game that the Islanders were able to pull out in a shootout. Both teams right now are have been up and down. The Rangers have been very up and down over the last few weeks. I mean, really over the last month and a half. I mean, they. They have struggled at times defensively. I don't know if Dan Girardi is going to play tomorrow for them. He suffered a lacerated hand in the last game against the Bruins. So we'll see if he's in there. If not, it'll be Dylan McElrath there, very physically
impressive. Was it his right hand?
If it was his right hand, then I'm sure it'll be a lot worse for him than if it was his other hand. So
yeah, that kind of sucked. I'm guessing he's a righty, so that would kind of suck. Yeah.
I think he is a right-handed shot, actually, Girardi. Yeah, but look, it's always a lot of fun when those two teams get together. It's it's usually a competitive, especially now. Both teams are good. It's usually a competitive game. It's a big game in the standings. They both have the same amount of points right now, I believe. I think they're both tied at 51 points, something like that. And so it's a big game for the two teams, and they will not play again, I think, until March. Then they have two more matchups the rest of the season. Both will be at the Garden. So the Islanders just need to build off of Tuesday's win. Again, a game that they didn't play, great, but I thought they played pretty well. You saw Tavares, who was out there on Tuesday with Mikhail Gabrovsky and Strome, of course, Ryan Strome, the three of them, I thought played very well. So you want to see them, if they, continue their good play, if he has them out there again, that trio on tomorrow night. And then, then Sunday they play an out-of-conference game against the Vancouver Canucks, a team that's, also a mediocre team, is on the fringe of the playoffs. They have a handful of games before the All-Star break, and then they will hopefully get back, some key guys, get reinforcements. Looking forward. Should be fun.
All right.
Any thoughts?
Well, since no one else is listening at this point, I'll reiterate the Twitter challenge that's been posed to you, and we'll revisit whether you've lived up to it. I will be looking forward to checking the Twitter account when we air live next. So,
I accept your challenge, sir.
Oh, and meanwhile, the Powerball numbers have been announced, so we'll see if we become billionaires.
So are we gajillionaires or whatever it is?
Yeah, we'll have to check. All right. I will check that right now.
When?
Right now.
Well, we'll educate our audience on that the next podcast. How's that? Just in case those who are unaware of the origins of right now.
Okay. Until next time.
Until next time. Until next time.
Over and out.
I'm the hip and the lip signing out. All right, next.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Everybody together.